Blog Talk Radio.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com is your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
All right. Looking forward to talking today. We, I guess, Mike, what is this? Christmas morning? I mean, opening day for baseball. I don't know if there's a better day of the year. I don't know if there's a day of the year that I like more than today. Obviously, last night we had the Cubs and the Cubs and Cardinals jump off the season for us in a good game. But I'm looking forward to looking at a full slate of games tonight. I know the Red Sox just kicked off their game a couple of minutes ago, and Mr. Dustin Pedroia, number two hitter in the Red Sox lineup, is going to be doing this all season. But he hit a bomb to right field for a 1-0 lead there, and so that's the extent of what I've been looking at for today. But are you excited as I am for today? I mean, this is awesome.
Yeah, I am. I think that with opening day, it's with baseball, and I don't know if it's just because you have baseball so early in the day, and that just makes it even more exciting compared to, like, even football. And I'm a bigger fan of football than I am baseball, but with football, you got to wait all the way. If you're on the East Coast, you got to wait until, like, 7 o'clock, And I think that just takes the fun out of it. But with baseball, they're kicking off early this morning, and they're ready to go, and I think that just makes it all the more exciting.
Yeah, I'm loving this. We got 162 games to go. We got a long season ahead of us. With football, obviously, you're looking at once a week. But with baseball, I mean, you've got action every single day for basically the next 6 months straight. And so I'm absolutely stoked about it. I actually just loaded up this morning my first couple of DFS lineups on DraftKings. And I'm sure, Mike, you and I are going to get into some of the DFS stuff, because I know that you're, in years past, you haven't been a big baseball DFS guy, but this year you're going to be looking to get more into that swing. And then for myself, I started last year really very seriously doing it. I think the year before I had kind of dabbled a little bit, but I'm looking forward to actually making a little bit of money this season, hopefully, and hopefully even imparting some of that knowledge onto my Twitter followers and the guys listening to the podcast as well. So now that we've started, now that the season has actually kicked off and ready to go, why don't you tell me a couple of things that you're most excited about watching this year? I mean, I know that we've got, for instance, Devin Travis is a guy that I've been, really high on this whole offseason. Kind of, I was hoping he was going to get a chance to show what he can do. He ended up getting the call up to the Blue Jays, got the roster spot. He's actually in the starting lineup for the Blue Jays today, and I just saw a few minutes ago that he also hit a home run in his debut. So that looks like it's starting off on a good foot. So he's one guy that I'm really looking forward to. And I'm not even really going to talk about my Red Sox. I mean, Mookie Betts is somebody that I'm falling in love with more and more as the days go on. But tell us a little bit about what you're most excited about watching.
I think I'm really big on the prospects. And, I was kind of surprised by how many of these prospects actually got sent down. And I don't know if that – most of them have to do with just contract reasons or what. But I'm looking to see, some of these players making a bounce back and just seeing how well they do coming up. And so players, Ben and, those guys, are just top of my list. I want to track them, see, what they're doing every day and just get really excited about these features that look like they're going to be sort of the new generation of baseball players.
Absolutely. Last week we talked a little bit about that with Zach on the line with us, that idea that a lot of these guys are, accruing minor league time and not actually making the major league roster, not necessarily because of talent, but just simply because of the Super 2 status and the other things kind of surrounding that whole situation. So yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, we've got Chris Bryant who the math works out that he needs to be in the minors for 9 more games. And so that looks like a target, date of April 17th, April 18th, something like that. So it's very possible that we're going to see Bryant come up to the majors and get into that starting lineup and, start over Mike Holt starting, late April. We've also, you mentioned Byron Buxton. He's a guy that, you know, he's been really unfortunate the last couple of years. He's had a couple of freak injuries, just hasn't really been able to stay healthy. But, you know, talent-wise and pedigree, I mean, he's got to be one of the best players, you know, in terms of the five-tool guy. He's got to be one of the best players in the minors, kind of waiting for the pieces to fall into place and to get the opportunity. You know, the Twins also have Miguel Sano over at third base, and he's another highly touted prospect that I'm really looking to, forward to seeing as well. But, you know, you mentioned that a couple of these guys that were having solid springs got sent down. I think kind of in that same conversation, you'd include Carlos Rodon. I was kind of hoping he was going to latch on, get a back end of the rotation position with the White Sox, but it looks like they want him to get a little bit more seasoning, so they did go ahead and send him down to the minors. And, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him come up in 6 weeks, maybe a month or two. You know, obviously, at this point, you know, with Rodon having been drafted so recently, they do have quite a bit of time to play with this one in terms of, you know, if they want to delay that clock a lot, you know, they theoretically could have him in the minors the entire year. I think his talent specifically, I think Rodon is going to show enough that, they're, you know, the White Sox are going to be in contention you know, late enough in the season that they're going to want him up and want him playing and pitching for them. And so I think he's going to see major league time this year, regardless of that clock, so to speak. But those are a couple other guys that I'm looking for. But I'll tell you, Mike, one of the things that I'm really excited for is watching, and this is a little bit different, I guess, from what I normally talk about. But one of the things that I'm really looking forward to watching is Jay Bruce and Joey Votto in the Reds lineup. I mean, both these guys hurt last year with a variety of injuries, but both of these guys are, you know, the ultimate gamers and phenomenal hitters. And I'm really hoping that both those guys kind of, you know, take the next step in terms of getting really healthy and actually, you know, becoming who they were before. I mean, you know, this past year, maybe just this offseason, a lot of people have been down on Votto. You know, he can't hit. He can't get around with a fastball, this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, for me, I just took that in my fantasy draft this year. I took that as a way to get him at phenomenal value. So I was grabbing Joey Votto in the, you know, mid to late rounds basically everywhere I could, because, you know, I think that this guy, you know, number one, he walks a ton already. So that's going to, you know, you're going to get the walks no matter what. And so you're going to get the on-base percentage that just kind of comes with that, you know, either way. And then hopefully, you know, he's able to get a little bit of that bat back, a little bit of that power back. You know, they've got Todd Frazier, who's going to take that next step up. They've got Billy Hamilton, who I'm hoping will, you know, will emerge even more and, you know, learn how to hit the fastball rather than just steal bases. And then, you know, with Jay Bruce, a little bit of protection in that lineup as well. I think that both of those guys are kind of primed for big bounce back years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, and I like the fact that Votto's going to be batting second in the lineup, and that's going to give him a lot more at-bats for one. And two, he's probably, because of, like you said, the walks, he's going to be on base a lot more. So, and then you follow up with those power hitters, you know, it's going to be it's a really good lineup if they can stay healthy. And they got Cueto, and they got really good pitching there too. So this team is definitely something to look out for.
Yeah, you know, they've got Rafael Iglesias, who is going to, I think he's going to start in the bullpen, but may kind of work his way into the back end of the rotation. As you mentioned, Joey Votto is going to be in the number two hole. And I'll tell you, I love that for him. But who else I really love that for is Billy Hamilton, because here's what I see happening time and time again over the season. So Billy Hamilton, one way or another, gets on first base. Okay, whether it's a single or a bunt single or a walk, I don't really care how he gets on first, but he gets on first. And we all know that Joey Votto loves to take pitches. He likes to walk. He likes to see the ball. So he's not a first pitch swinging type of guy. And so Hamilton's going to get the opportunity to steal second. He may even get the opportunity to steal third. And then you know what, Mike? Every time, basically, and I don't obviously mean every time, but virtually every time that Hamilton is on base and Votto makes contact with the ball, Hamilton's going to score. If, you know, if Votto slaps a single and Hamilton, you know, happens to be on second or third, that's an automatic run. So it's an RBI for Votto and it's a run for Hamilton. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Hamilton, if he can get on base at a good enough clip, wouldn't be surprised to see him top 110, 115 runs this year, because, you know, just simply because Votto is such a good contact hitter that if there's a guy running, you know, if there's a runner, this one being Hamilton, in scoring position, I have a lot of confidence that Votto's a good enough hitter to get that guy in.
Yeah, and then also the fact that how much pressure it's going to be putting on the pitching staff, because when you have someone that has the speed like Hamilton does, and the ability to take pitches like Votto does, then what you're doing is you're putting a lot of pressure on the pitching staff to make the right pitch. And what's better for a power hitter in the 3, 4, or 5 holes to get that fastball, that, you know, that sweet fastball right down the middle, because you have to make that perfect pitch. And there you go. For, you know, pretty soon that you know it's 3-0, and now you're in a real big hole.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, yeah, you know, you've got Votto, and, you know, let's say that he slaps the score Hamilton. You know, the next guy up, I think the next guy up would be Mesoraco. I think they're planning to bat him third. And, hey, you and I both know, you know, you groove a fastball to Mesoraco, that thing's going 400 feet the other direction.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the Reds are kind of a little bit of a sleeper. I haven't heard too many people talking about them in terms of a team that can really be in contention. But if they're able to I think if their starters are able to keep them in ball games more often than not, I think they're going to be a really strong team this year, because they do have the bullpen. Obviously, you've got Aroldis Chapman, you know, locking down the end of that bullpen, but they also have some solid bullpen pieces for those, you know, 6, 7, 8 innings. So if their starters can routinely keep them in ball games and get into the 6th or 7th inning, this is a team that I could see kind of, you know, coming in on strong and really surprising some people.
Yeah, if they stay healthy, I don't see why they're not pretty much an automatic playoff team. And, you know, they haven't had the best of luck in the playoffs, but, you know, in any year, any time, it can change. So, yeah, I definitely look at them as one of those teams that are easily one of the, I would say, the top 4 teams going heading in to this season.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that at all. You know, Mike, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I want to get this out here, because I've been kind of, you know, I'm actually, you can't see me, but I'm actually kind of dancing around. No, I say dancing. I'm kind of jumping around the room here. I've got my little office, and I'm waiting to say this, and I'm super stoked about this. This is something that you and I have been working on for weeks now, and it's, you know, come together, and finally we have launched. You know, obviously we're part of the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Network, and this is a podcast, you know, that we do on that network and for that site. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were approached by the Asylum Sports Network. Their Twitter handle is @AsylumFootball, and it's the Fleeger and Briggs Asylum Sports Network. They approached us with a partnership idea, and they wanted to come together and syndicate the podcast for us. And so we're actually going to be broadcast on their network from now on. You can catch that show on Wednesday evenings. Obviously, we're live right now on Monday evening. But I guess today it's Monday afternoon, but usually it will be Monday evenings. But I'm really excited about this opportunity. You know, the Asylum Sports Network is putting together a phenomenal team of syndicated podcast representatives. They've got Russell Clay, who's going to be doing a football one. They've got a couple other guys that I haven't had a chance to meet yet, but I know that there's a lot of hot news coming out of the Asylum Sports Network, and I'm just stoked to be a part of it. So I'm glad to have you on board with us, and what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's awesome. I remember when you sort of approached it to me, I was pretty much jumping out of my seat. You know, it's just one of those things that we look forward to. I mean, these are the goals that we set forth when we start podcasting, and then when someone takes notice, and it's in a positive way, it's always flattering. And for, you know, Asylum to say, hey, you know, we like you guys, is just an awesome feeling. And, you know, we're going to keep on keeping on, and definitely much props to the Asylum Network.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, hey, Mike, you and I have, we've got some pressure now. We got to bring the heat. We got to bring the goods and make sure that we're getting that listenership up and representing the Fantasy Sports Warehouse well, but also, you know, helping the Asylum Sports Network get even more exposure, you know, on top of that. But I think you're right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Mike, you and I don't get paid for this, right? I mean, we take the time out of our day and out of our week to research for the show and then put the show on. Well, you know, we're not looking or doing it for the money. It's really just for the love of the game and for someone, like you said. I mean, for somebody to you know, to listen to our podcast and take note and you know, approach us with a partnership. You know, you kind of. Tonight, consider kind of the infancy of the podcast is a special opportunity, and I'm looking forward to taking full advantage of this thing and kind of growing into this role. You know, I know you and I have totally lost count now, but I think, I mean, this has got to be, you know, podcast number 20 or so, and so we're, you know, only getting into this, and I think the timing is perfect because, you know, obviously, you know, we just started the baseball season and kind of You know, putting all this together is something that's really been motivating for me, and I'm looking to, I'm forward to a great season of football, or football, good Lord, of baseball with you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm definitely looking forward to it. It seems like we've been doing this for quite a while, but as you said, we're sort of just barely in the infancy stage. So, yeah, the more we can do this, the better and happier I'm going to be.
Now, did you get a chance to watch any of the game last night?
No, I didn't. I was traveling, so I missed that game.
All right, so I'm going to give a quick rundown of the game. We don't really need to talk about it, but two things that I thought were really interesting. Number one, Jason Hayward, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm going to try to pull them up here as I'm talking. But Jason Hayward last season batted 169 on the year against left-handed pitching. Okay, for the year he batted 169. I want to say, and don't quote me on this, but I want to say it was something like 24 for 165 or something around that ballpark.
My God.
And the last time that Jason Hayward went 3 for 3 in a game against one starting pitcher who was left-handed was back in June 22nd of 2012. And, Mike, I'll give you one guess who was on the mound that day.
Let's see. I hope it wasn't a Giant.
No,
I'm
going to
go
with
Tim Lincecum.
Nope. well, hey, you and I both know the Lincecum's not a lefty. Come on now.
Yeah, that's true. I was just guessing pitchers.
But lo and behold, it was actually the same guy that he faced last night. It was John Lester. And you know what Jason Hayward did yesterday? He went 3 for 3 against Lester. And so in the last two starts, the last two times that Jason Hayward has gone 3 for 3 against the lefty has both been against John Lester. So I thought that was interesting enough to kind of point out. I kind of chuckled to myself when I read that. And then the second thing, and Mike, you're going to have to look this up later after the podcast, look it up on YouTube or something. But the complete and utter ineptitude that Jorge Soler showed in right field on the defensive side of the ball was almost laughable last night. And I say almost laughable because it would be laughable if it wasn't something to be concerned about. But good God, Mike, this man looked completely lost. And so, you know, what was it, you know, the lights of Wrigley Field? You know, I know they've been doing renovations. Was it the fact that the lights were too bright and he got, you know, the lights were, you know, blinding him? Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe. But this is something I'm going to be watching out for because I hadn't really keyed into that at all. I hadn't realized that he had a potential to be a defensive liability. But good Lord, from what I saw last night, that scared the crap out of me. He misplayed two balls so badly that I think a little leaguer could have taken a better route to the ball. And then he made one throw that I almost had to turn away and shut my eyes. It was just bad. but outside of those two things from Soler, you know, I think the Cubs they showed that you know they're going to have some growing pains this year. They're going to have some trials and tribulations. I mean, I know a lot of people have been high on them, and you know, they've got all the hype because they've got a ton of young talent, you know, not even including Chris Bryant. They've got a ton of other young talent on the team. But from what I saw last night, I'll tell you, I think that they're going to be more of a work in progress than I may have been hoping for. I think they're going to do fine this year. You know, I'm certainly not going to write them off after one game because that would just be ridiculous. But this is something, you know, kind of opened my eyes to. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, spring training shows you one thing. But, you know, you expect that when opening day rolls around, these guys are ready to go and on top of it. And for them to get shut out on opening night and look the way that they did was a little concerning. You know, Lester after the game said that he admitted that he wasn't very sharp. He said that, you know, and this is something that kind of always baffles me or I find intriguing at the very least. He said that his stuff in the bullpen before the game had great breaks, had great bite. His staff ball was, you know, was zinging. And then when he got on the mound, he said that he kind of felt out of whack and lost it a little bit. And, you know, his from what I saw, his slider was, you know, was kind of flat. His fastball didn't really have much movement on it. And so, you know, whether that's him just kind of getting into the flow of the season and kind of getting into the swing of things, you know, I think that's more of what it was. But it's always interesting for me to hear a guy explain, you know, hey, I was on in the bullpen, and then, you know, when I took it to the mound, I lost some of it. What do you think some of that is?
It could be a lot of things. It could be, you know, for someone with Lester, I'm really kind of surprised by it. I would expect it more from someone that's lesser of a veteran, but mm-hmm. you know, it could just be opening day jitters. It could be the fact that the mound that he was working on in the bullpen wasn't equatable to the pitching mound on the field, and so he sort of just lost his, you know, sort of balance a little bit and had to take time to sort of regroup. It could be a lot of things. So I'm kind of surprised with someone that's a veteran like Lester is to have that kind of sort of going great in the bullpen, warming up to transferring that onto the field. So I'm sort of at loss there, but yeah, it's, you know, I just think it, whatever the reason may be, he obviously didn't do a good enough job.
You know, I think that's a great point. I think one of the things that I was thinking about is kind of the same concept, but, you know, I would expect, you know, I didn't have a good good idea or a good example off the top of my head, but, you know, if there is a rookie or, you know, a second-year guy that was getting that, you know, opening day start for the first time, those opening day jitters may have him kind of throwing a little bit harder and, you know, throwing a little bit higher than max effort in the bullpen. And you could kind of maybe see some fatigue in the first few innings because he kind of overexerted himself because he was excited in the bullpen before the game. But as you said, you know, you wouldn't expect to see that from Lester, who has started on opening day multiple times at this point. You know, he should get it, right? And so I don't think that's what it was. I don't think it was him, you know, under the bright lights of Wrigley. I don't think that had an effect. I think this may have just been more of an anomaly. But I think it's interesting, you know, just to kind of look at that kind of stuff. You know, we talked a little bit at the top of the show about DFS, about Daily Fantasy Sports, and I do want to quickly mention it. And Mike, you and I, we're not allowed to spill the beans. But guys listening, there is some hot news. There is something that we're working on at Fantasy Sports Warehouse that you do want to stay tuned in for. We can't announce it yet, but, you know, within the next week or two, there should be some hot news coming from us. You know, in terms of or related to DFS, so, you know, stay tuned for that. But, you know, Mike, you and I are going to talk a little bit about the FanDuel and DraftKings sites here and talk about some strategy and some other things that, you know, can be considering if you're, you know, like you, if you're looking to just get into DFS or just kind of starting to get used to it. Obviously, today was day one, so you've got all season to you know, kind of get all the kinks out. But, you know, that can be an expensive lesson, right? So if you're playing DraftKings all day and you're putting down real money, if you're just learning on the fly the entire year, that could get expensive real quick. So we're going to try to help, you know, shorten that learning curve a little bit, tell you a little bit about, you know, what to expect, what to be looking at. So Mike, why don't you start us off? Why don't you tell us, you know, I know that you are a little bit more comfortable with the FanDuel setup, and I'm more of a DraftKings guy. So why don't we start with FanDuel? Why don't you tell us, you know, what the stat categories are that you're going to be looking at, because I know that you were talking a little bit about that off air, just in terms of the stat categories themselves are actually a lot fewer on FanDuel than they are other places. And then also tell us,
right,
you know, in terms of roster construction or anything like that, you know, how you may go about putting together a team.
Right. So with baseball, at FanDuel, getting a win for your pitcher is probably one of the most important things, because you're looking at 4 points for a win, where the other points come from, you get 1 point per strikeout, 1 point per inning pitch, and a negative point for an earned run. So you're looking at, say, 2-1 strikeout inning, you get 2 points there, and then -1 for an earned run. So you get 2-1 there. That sort of balances it out. But with the win, getting major 4 points, that is really important. In fact, it is the most important category compared to batting, which is home runs, which you also get 4 points for. So you're looking at 4 points as being your major point getter. So what you want to do there is definitely look at the pitchers who are winning pitchers. You don't want to go with probably any of the Giants pitchers, because – hardly ever, they're going to get like 13 wins, 15 wins at the most. So you want to get pitchers that get the wins. Obviously, they're going to cost the most money, so you're going to have to skew down. But that would be the first thing I would look for, is which pitchers actually win you ball games. And then I would sort of trickle that down to what ballparks are they playing in. Obviously, you want ballparks that aren't, you know, hitter-friendly. So you want to stay away from those major ballparks and sort of maybe find a ballpark that's not so hitter friendly, and then just move down that way. So that's what I recommend pretty much for pitchers.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I would add there, I think it's important to, when you're talking about pitchers, two things. Number one, and this may be obvious, but I think it's important to at least talk about or at least mention. You want to try to, you know, skew favor the side of the high strikeout guys, but low walk guys. I'm always trying to find guys that's going to give me a solid number of strikeouts, but aren't going to walk many guys. Because, you know, obviously, if they're walking guys, those guys have a chance to get in and score. And that's not news to anyone listening. But that's something to think about in terms of if you're trying to make a decision, in other words, between, a $7,000 Chris Sale or a $5,500 Henderson Alvarez, I might pay up a little bit more for Sale because he's going to walk less fewer guys than Alvarez will, even though their strikeout numbers may be about the same. And then the other thing that I think I look at before making a pitcher decision is really actually very simple. Are they a National League pitcher or are they an American League pitcher? Because if they're an American League pitcher, I think that they're pretty much almost not, as a rule across the board, they're going to be giving up more runs on a first start basis. But also, if you think about it, in the National League, the pitcher is actually going to bat, right? And so the opposing pitcher may have just, a couple extra chances at a strikeout throughout the game when the pitcher is up. And that, that little bit of value may be the difference, for me picking between an AL guy and an NL guy. And so those are a couple
and
of things
also,
that I'm looking at.
Just to add to that, you're also looking at innings pitched, because with a National League pitcher, you're going to get more innings pitched or less innings pitched than an American League pitcher. So to add to a little bit to what you're saying, that's also another look at.
No, absolutely. And here, here's something that I have a hard time doing this because, generally I like to look at each game on the schedule as a different game and look at it, separately, but within the context of the rest of the game. So what I mean by that is the average starting pitcher is going to get 25 to 30 starts. Okay. And, let's say that two thirds of those are going to be good starts. And one third of them two thirds of them are going to be good starts, a few average starts, and a few bad starts. And so that's kind of the mix that you're looking at, especially for someone that you're going to be considering putting into one of your DFS lineups. And so one of the things that I've read time and time again, but I'm just not sure that I'm totally on board with, is avoiding a pitcher after he has walked a lot more batters than he struck out in any one start. So if let's say that Chris Sale goes out and pitches six innings, walks five guys and only strikes out three, the school of thought is to avoid him in his next start because that's a big enough red flag that you don't want to ride that coattail. You don't want to get in that streak. You want to find a different value. Like I said, I try to look at each game in and of itself, and so I don't really look at what they did in the past couple starts unless there's something glaring. Unless there's something really serious going on. What do you think about that? Do you think that start by start, if you're looking at somebody for a game in a week from now, should you be concerned about what he did his past, his last start or his start before?
It depends. I think if you're looking at someone that is a top tier pitcher, say as you mentioned, Chris Sale, right? If he has one bad game, I'm going to be less looking at that as any kind of trend than I would if there's a pitcher out there that is sort of either it's had a couple bad years or is a younger pitcher, then I might be more concerned about it. But with someone that's a top-flight pitcher, I'm not going to be concerned until it's, two, three games in a row. Then I'm going to be looking at it a lot more closely. But I'd only be concerned if it was either A, a younger pitcher, or B, someone that's shown struggles.
No, that makes sense. And you mentioned park factors, and I think park factors is a pretty gigantic part of DFS because at the end of the day, obviously since it's daily fantasy, you're not investing in these guys for any more than one game, and you only really need to look at that one game of value. And so, when your pitcher is either away or at home in Coors Field, I'd suggest avoiding him altogether. I wouldn't want to be on the pitching side of somebody in Coors. Similarly, I really wouldn't want to be having somebody pitching in Chase Field in Phoenix because, you know, that seems to be a pretty big hitter's park as well. Target
right.
Field, you know, Fenway even, Nationals Park. I mean, these are all, you know, Rogers Center up in Toronto. These are all places that I'm going to try to avoid if, you know, if I can, just simply because of the park factors. I mean, you know, on the flip side of the coin, if guys are playing in, you know, in Petco or in Safeco or in Dodger Stadium or AT&T Park over in San Francisco, you know, those are some stadiums that I'm going to be leaning towards. I mean, those are some games that if I see a good matchup, you know, in one of those games, I'm going to be probably skewing towards those games and away from, you know, away from the other ones, because at the end of the day, you know, you only need one pitcher to absolutely bomb, and your whole lineup is probably shot. Because, I mean, as you said, you know, you probably want to pay up for pitchers, and that's because, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I mean, if one pitcher totally misses, your whole lineup is probably shot, because a lot of the value can come from those pitchers. And but on the flip side of the coin, if you nail two pitchers and they have, you know, outstanding outings, you're going to probably be in a pretty good position to at least cash, if not make a run at the top of the leaderboard, if you made some other good picks.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And so to kind of hammer home that point a little bit, I guess, I'm going to talk a little bit about the lineups that I put together for today, just in brief, because I want to, you know, I think a couple of them give a pretty good snapshot of some of the things that we were discussing. Mike, did you get a chance today to put any lineups together or not yet?
You know, I started to look at it, and then I got distracted, so I didn't really fully prepare a lineup.
No problem. So I'm going to talk about one of these lineups that actually so far is doing pretty well. You know, I don't think it's going to cash. You know, I'd be surprised if it did, but at least it probably will cash now that I'm looking at it. I'm not positive. But, you know, from my pitchers, I went with Chris Archer against Baltimore, and they're in Tampa. And then I went with Dallas Keuchel, however you say that, against the Indians in Houston. And, you know, I went with Dallas because he was a pretty low-priced option. He was kind of middle of the road. And I went with Archer. He was a little bit more expensive, but I went with him because he was a lot less expensive than the guy that I wanted, who was Max Scherzer. And I was able to put in a couple other pieces in my lineup that fit better and were a little bit more expensive. I missed on Danny Santana altogether. I had him in my shortstop spot, and it looks like he didn't even start, which is another thing. It kind of jogs my memory. Unfortunately, with these lineups, I put them in last night but didn't get a chance to change them this morning. And so when you're looking at lineups, there are two things that are unbelievably important. Number one, make sure that the guy that you're putting in your lineup is actually starting the game, because a lot of times these lineups or the guy that you think is going to start may just get that weird day off or may, you know, be nursing a hamstring or whatever and may be out of the lineup. And if you have somebody that's not starting, I mean, you have a zero from the get-go, and so you've kind of shot yourself in the foot. And as I'm saying that, I mean, I did that today, but hey, it's opening day. I'm allowed to mulligan, right?
There you go.
but continuing on, so, you know, so my catcher was Brian McCann, and, you know, I don't have the numbers up here in terms of, you know, where he was in the grand scheme of things in terms of price value, but I do know that he was middle of the road. I know that the top guy was Buster Posey, and I want to say he was at 5,400. Devin Mesoraco is at 4,200, and he was another guy that I was looking at. He's another guy that I actually have in a different lineup of mine. And then going down from there, I really liked the Toronto matchup in Yankee Stadium, and so I put in a couple of Blue Jays here. I took Jose Bautista and Edward Encarnacion. Encarnacion so far, or actually I guess it's the top of the ninth, so this may be his death. But he went 1-for-4 with a home run, 2 RBIs, and a run. So, you know, I got 16 points out of him, which is nice. And then Bautista hasn't done anything yet, unfortunately. It looks like he's 0-for-4 so far. So that was a dud as well. Ian Kinsler in Detroit. You know, the reason I took him is because who was starting from Minnesota? Phil Hughes was starting from Minnesota. I'm not a Phil Hughes fan. I mean, Phil Hughes on the pitching side is going to get you an average number of strikeouts. He's going to keep you in the ball game, but in terms of a fantasy matchup, you know, I'm not super stoked if I'm having or if I'm owning Hughes. And so I went with Kinsler, who I think is primed for a pretty good year this year. He's got good protection in that lineup. It was kind of a risky play, but a low risk, I guess. He did get two hits, so that got me to 6 points. And then Nolan Arenado, this goes to that Colorado thing. Now, they were playing in Milwaukee, but I happen to be a big Nolan Arenado fan. And also that lineup this year, I think that lineup for the Rockies may be the best offensive lineup that they've put together in a number of years. It may be, the best since years of, Larry Walker, Vinny Castilla, Dante Bichette, Andres Galarraga, all those guys. So Arenado went off for me today. Three hits, a double, a home run, four RBIs, and three runs for a total of 32 points, which is huge. So that was really nice. And I did notice that that's tomorrow. Never mind. Okay. And then continuing on, the other one that I picked, and this was a pretty low price guy, but I just liked the matchup, and it worked out well this time. JD Martinez for the Tigers. I took him, and he had a home run. It was only a solo home run, but that's one hit, one homer, one RBI, and one run for a total of 14 points. And so you'll notice, by the way, that I took two Blue Jays and I took two Tigers, and that's not by accident. I mean, the reason that you take two guys on a team is pretty obvious, right? And I try to take guys that are back-to-back in the lineup simply because, let's say, and just for instance, let's say that Jose Bautista had hit a single, and then Encarnacion comes right up after him, and he hits a home run. Not only did I get credit for the single from Bautista, I also got the run for Bautista when he scored on the Encarnacion home run that I also get points for. And so you're kind of doubling up points if you can hit it right and if you're picking the right guys. And then similarly, I went with JD Martinez and Ian Kinsler. Didn't happen that one of them knocked in the other one, but that's something that will happen time and time again throughout the season. So, what that's called is called stacking. And, so stacking is something that I would strongly suggest looking into and doing more often than not. I mean, usually I try to have a couple of different matchups that are like that, where I'm going to get, value from a couple of guys based on one thing one combination, I guess you'd call it. And those are the lineups that I was looking at, where that was one of the lineups that I looked at for today. I had JD Martinez and Nolan Arenado kind of across the board, and then I took a couple of shots in the dark, for lack of a better word. And you know what, Mike? I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to put myself out there on blast, just for the fun of it. I know I've been railing against Chase Headley all offseason, and I know I've been talking about how I wouldn't own him and how I'm not a believer in all of these things. And I went against the grain, and I put Chase Headley in my lineup for today, and he rewarded me with 0 points. So I'm going to go back to Chase Headley is crap. Chase Headley is crap. Don't own him. Don't draft him. Just leave him on the waivers. Just leave him alone. It's not worth it. I hate myself. I hate myself right now. You have no idea.
that's like the worst. Oh, man.
It's painful. the other two guys that I'm high on, and obviously they haven't started yet, but I'm expecting a big day out of Todd Frazier and Neil Walker as well. I'm looking for Frazier to hit a bomb tonight off of Valeriano, and I think the chances of Neil Walker going yard off of Cueto is actually good as well, because the Walkers don't have them in front of me, but Walker's numbers off Cueto are pretty substantial. And I didn't actually realize it until today, but Walker looks like he's been on a tear. In the spring, he was batting .366 with a couple of homers and 10 RBIs. And obviously, you and I have talked about multiple times, spring stats don't matter, but you know what? If somebody's hitting nearly .400 and he's a starter and has been for a while, so it's not just a rookie, facing the 7th, 8th, and 8th, 9th inning guys in spring training, I tend to look at that, and that gets me a little excited. I mean, just like Mike Trout hit damn near .500 this spring. I mean, obviously Mike Trout is Mike Trout, but it's nice to see guys like that start off the year, hot at the plate.
Yeah, it just reaffirms more of your faith in the player. So someone like Mike Trout that, you're always worried because he's going to go first in probably 98% of the drafts, and you're drafting first, you're probably going to draft him, and then it's that, and it does to me. It's just like that, always that worry. Okay, what happens if he has that off year? And I just took him number one in my draft, and he just has an off year, and you get worried, and then you're like, all that anticipation comes up. But then he comes out opening day and does well. Then you're like, okay, everything is good, and I'm ready to go.
You know, I'll tell you, it's interesting you mentioned Trout, though, because I bet you that Trout's down year would still be an all-star caliber year, and he'd still probably hit, you know, 25 to 30 home runs even in an off year.
Yeah, exactly. That's how good his numbers are, and they're all across the board. He's absolutely, you know, just an amazing ball player, and, you know, I wouldn't mind him being on the Giants, but, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, really.
You know, it was funny. Mike Trout gave an interview. I think it was early last week, maybe late this past week, I should say, where the reporter told him that, hey, you know, you're the consensus number one fantasy baseball player, and you're being taken number one basically across the board in all fantasy baseball drafts. You know, what do you think about that? And he was just, you know, he kind of laughed to himself and was like, yeah, you know, I'd probably do the same thing if I was in fantasy baseball. I don't play it, but, you know, I would certainly take, you know, I'd be taking myself number one too. I just kind of like the like the confidence, I guess.
And I think that players are doing that more often, where they speak to the fact of fantasy sports. I noticed that last season, during the preseason for football, where a lot of players have been just sort of talking about they would take themselves first in the draft. So basically telling everybody that, hey, if you're going to have the first pick, you pick me. You know, so a lot of players, I think, are using that as a self-confidence measure to show that they're going to do well that season.
Now, I don't remember exactly who it was, so if you remember, please help me. But I want to say it was Julius Thomas, who this past season was in the fantasy football playoff. Like, was hit in his own fantasy football playoff. Well, actually, you know what? It couldn't have been the playoffs. I think it was whatever week that he went off for, like, those three touchdowns. And for some reason, he didn't start himself in his own lineup. And he was on the bench for his own three touchdown performance. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. I love that.
Oh, my goodness.
That's just the ultimate bad beat, right? I mean, like, you are the player, and you bench yourself, and then you go off. I mean, I don't know if anything would hurt more than that.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, wow. That is hilarious.
Oh, man. Okay, so going down the rundown here, I wanted to talk a little bit about the games on the docket for today. Like I mentioned, the Red Sox and Phillies went off an hour ago in Philadelphia. They've got Buchholz and Hamels throwing there. A couple of other games I want to talk about here. The Blue Jays are at the Yankees in the 105 game, and now I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say that the Blue Jays are up 5-1. I could be a little bit off by that, but I think that's about right. Let me check. As I'm pulling that up, though.
Yeah, it's a final 6-1 Blue Jays over the Yankees.
6-1, okay. So 6-1 final there. And so Tanaka, obviously, you know, we've been talking about, or you know, you and I have not been, but the industry kind of has been abuzz with this diminished velocity. You know, Tanaka a couple of days ago came out and said, you know, hey, you can expect diminished velocity this year. You can expect that fastball not to be as fast as last year, but I'm learning how to pitch differently, and I'm going to pick up some things. And he basically was saying, I'm going to have to learn how to pitch rather than just throw. And so, I thought it was interesting because, you know, he's a guy that, I mean, obviously last year, you know, he had that 1.99 ERA, had phenomenal strikeout to walk ratio, you know, had all of the intangibles, you know, looked like he was going to be an ace. And then towards the end of the year, he started to break down. They were talking about having him do Tommy John surgery. He decided to rehab it and not do the Tommy John surgery. And so now, you know, I'm a little wary. I mean, you know, on the face of it, at the surface, it looks like he should be an ace. It looks like he should be number one, and you should get that value. But I don't know if you noticed, but in drafts across fantasy baseball, Tanaka was getting drafted super, super late and just dropping off the map in a lot of places. You know, I've been trying to trade him in one of my leagues for a couple weeks now, and I think I got as far down as offering him straight up for Andrew Heaney and still got declined.
Which, wow.
I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I think that guy may be a little bit off his rocker with that specific offer. But I do think it's interesting that there's a consensus that this guy is in a world of hurt and is not worth investing in fantasy baseball. And so with that, you know, I'm going to be staying away from Tanaka for the time being in DFS because, you know, his price at the moment doesn't reflect that downturn in value, you know, the less strikeouts, the fewer, you know, innings and all those kind of things. So you're not getting the value out of that that you should. So I'm avoiding him, you know, all those places. But in fantasy baseball, because of the fact that his value is so, you know, basement low, I'm keeping him everywhere because at the end of the day, I mean, what I'm going to get back isn't nearly enough, you know, isn't nearly enough to make him leave my team, assuming he can, you know, be the Tanaka that we know.
Yeah, well, he had a 9 ERA today. He did strike out 6 in 4 innings, gave up a homer, and five runs, 4 earned. So the strikeouts look pretty good. Other than that, it's not very good at all. Only 82 pitches, 50 strikes. So, eek.
82 pitches, you said?
Yes, 82.
Yeah, that's not going to cut it. that kind of start's not going to get it done. The Yankees are going to need a lot more out of him as the weeks go on here. I don't think we need to keep saying this, but everybody, you know, make sure that you're taking all of this with a grain of salt because we're on day one of an 162 game season. So all of these things that we're talking about can all, you know, change as quickly as tomorrow. So this is not something, you know, I'm not saying, you know, this is a death nail, but Tanaka at this point needs to show me, you know, that he is not gonna, you know, not gonna be having after effects from the injury, and is actually, you know, back to his quote unquote former self before I'm really looking to invest in DFS on him.
Yeah, and he only pitched 4 innings, so 82 pitches in 4 innings. You're definitely trying to avoid all of that as much as possible. I mean, that's average with 20 pitches per inning. Yeah. Not good.
Not good at all. What? How many walks did you say he had? Did you say?
Let's see. I don't know right offhand. I can't. I don't know if they.
No problem.
They placed that.
No problem. But I did think it was interesting that you know, usually if you're looking at a Yankees Blue Jays. You know, regardless of whether it's in Toronto or in New York, if you're looking at a Yankee Blue Jays game, the over-under, you know, talking about Vegas for a second, the over-under is probably going to be a little inflated. I thought it was interesting that for the game tonight, it was a 7.5 line, and you said the game ended at 6-1, right?
Yes.
I don't want to harp on it. We don't need to talk about it for very long. I am just, and honestly, I don't know how much you actually bet on baseball or bet on professional sports as a whole. I am absolutely just flabbergasted at how good these guys in Vegas are, you know, the winemakers. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
They missed this game by half a game. So, you know, they got it perfectly right because in terms of them making money, they nailed it. They were a half a run off.
Yeah, especially baseball. I mean, I can see football. Football is a little bit easier to get the scores correct. But in baseball, talking about just wild, you can have 14-0 one game, and then the other team, say the Blue Jays win 14-0 in game one, and then the Yankees could take the next two games. So if you look at it, well, 14-0 the first game, they're a lot better team, and then all of a sudden they lose the next two games, and they only score 2 runs total, and it's like, you know. So in baseball, it's just such a wild, wild way to just nail that. I think it's even more impressive.
It really is. The reason I mentioned that, the reason I want to talk about it is because when I'm putting together my DFS lineup, two things that I absolutely look at are the run total of a Vegas line, but also I look at the projected run scored for the team that I'm looking at. So, you know, if, for instance, the projected run total for the Yankees, let me go back here, for the Yankees in that game, for the Blue Jays in that game was 4.2. Now they ended up scoring 6, but 4.2 was on the higher end, actually the second highest total of projected run total for any one team on for any of the games today. So that's another reason that I took a couple of the Blue Jays hitters because they were just projecting to score more runs. And lo and behold, like I said, I mean, these Vegas guys, I don't know what kind of Kool-Aid they're drinking. I don't know what they're doing on a day-to-day basis or what's going on, but they've got this thing locked down. And so, you know what? I'm more than willing to admit that I don't know as much as these guys when it comes to some of this stuff. And so I'm going to rely on their expertise. And so if they tell me that the, you know, the run total is going to be inflated for this game or that game, I'm going to be inclined to listen. And, you know, I think that that's something that some people may not do. You know, they think it's, and as you said, I think, you know, some people may think it's so fluky that it's just not worth, you know, paying attention to. But at the end of the day, I mean, more often than not, these guys are making a killing. I know that Vegas makes more on the baseball season every year than most any other professional sport that they run. And, you know, there's a reason for that, because they're just that good. And so, you know, whenever I can rely on somebody and their information, you know, that does this on a daily basis for a job, not to mention that they're doing it, you know, probably to make money for a multi-billion dollar corporation, I'm going to jump on board on that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a good guide to sort of look at. That way you know exactly what team's going to be scoring and which teams aren't. And that way you could sort of match that up with your lineup and see, okay, well, this team's projected for more runs, so obviously you want those hitters to, you know, be in your lineup.
Right, and you know, I think that kind of goes along with, you know, you want to avoid games in Coors, you want to target games in Comerica, you know, things like that. I think all of that is kind of in the same narrative, and it all kind of goes together. But at the same time, I think it's important to kind of look at all of those different things, because, you know, the difference between, and I'm going to make these numbers up, but the difference between first place and 25th place in one of the tournaments that I was playing today, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say first place is 10,000 and 25th place is, like, I think it's 300 or something like that. And so, and the difference between, in terms of point difference, the difference between first place and 25th place, you know, can only be as few as 7 or 8 points. And so, and as I talked about before with the stat categories and the values of that roster that I mentioned, I mean, that can be as simple as a double or two or a home run. I mean, that can be the difference between, you know, game-changing money and just, you know, another simple cash. And so, you know, when you're looking at these rosters, you know, make sure that you're looking at each permutation and make sure that, you know, you don't just throw the first guy that looks, you know, looks good in there and just keep going. I mean, it's important to make sure that you're picking the right values and looking at the matchups and taking, you know, a methodical approach to this, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not gonna consistently cash unless you're doing the homework, because, you know, there are guys out there, you know, dozens and dozens of guys out there that this is what they do to make their living. I mean, you know, a lot of us have other jobs. A lot of us have other 9-to-5s. I mean, there are a ton of guys that all they do year-round is play baseball DFS, and that's what they do for their job. And, you know, if you're trying to compete against those guys, you know, with minimal to no, you know, to no preparation, it's going to be a pretty hard proposition to make anything on. One of the other things that I wanted to mention is just kind of the different game types, obviously, because there's so many different, you know, different game types that we can play. So there's head-to-head, which, you know, Mike, you and I just wanted to play one-on-one. So, you know, if I score more runs or more points than you, I take the prize pool. If you score more points, you take the prize pool. That's one way. You know, there are four-team or three-team. I think there are actually three-team tournaments these days. And, you know, usually the three-team or the three-player tournaments are going to be winner-take-all, so the one that finishes in first takes the entire prize pool. You've got something called a 50-50. What a 50-50 is let's say there's a $10 entry fee and there's a max of 100 players. A 50-50, what that means is that the top 50 players would double their money, and so they'd get $20, and the bottom 50 players would get nothing back. And so that's just an easy way to kind of – what I call it is a bankroll builder, because, you know, if you're able to pick a lineup that you feel comfortable. I mean, once again, all you need to do is finish in the top half. You don't need to cash, you know, in the top two or top three or whatever. You know, the 50th place in that scenario, that 50th place pays the same as the top place. And so if you can get a lineup that's just going to cash, you can double your money. And if you do that enough times, I mean, that's a good enough return that if you do that time and time again, you're going to start building a good enough bankroll. Because I imagine, you know, if when I started, I was able to put, you know, a little bit of money on there, and so I didn't really have to, you know, to be budgeting game by game and really pinching the dollars in terms of the entries that I was making and things like that. But I bet, you know, there's plenty of guys out there that, you know, want to try to build a bankroll from, you know, a $20 deposit, maybe a $50 deposit. And if you're trying to do that, you know, it's important to build slowly. And so what I would suggest, Mike, and tell me if you agree with this, but, you know, what I would suggest is avoiding the guaranteed prize pool tournaments. What that means if those are, you know, the 1,000-person or the 2,000-person or the 20,000-person tournaments that have the prize pools that are only paying out, you know, the top 10%. And now, you know, will the prizes at the top be a lot more? You know, will you have the chance to win $10,000 or $25,000 or $100,000? You certainly will. But the chances of that happening are so minuscule that I would certainly suggest starting at those 50-50s or starting at a much smaller, maybe even the head-to-head, to kind of, you know, not only get acclimated to the system, but also, you know, you don't want to blow your whole bankroll on just taking shots at the moon.
Yeah, I agree totally with you. It's like in poker sense, you don't want to have your first tournament go in and you're going into the World Series main event. You don't want to spend $10,000 to get a seat and play against 3,000 people. You're just not going to – it's just, you know, yeah, you luck, I mean, yeah, but you also might get struck by lightning going to the tournament too. So it's just one of those things where if you want to do something for fun and you don't care and you throw in some money, fine. But if you're really serious about it, you want to take it slow. You want to take the first tournaments that, you know, so you can, like you said, get acclimated, understand the system. And those are your pretty basic $2 to $5 tournaments, and then sort of build your bankroll. And even though it's coming along slowly, you are building it. And then you can sort of take the next step. So, I would totally avoid those big tournaments just because, you know, your chances are one out of how many other people are rolled in there. And so if there's 500 people, your chances are 1 in 500. And I'd rather take a 1-1 odd than a 1 in 500 odd.
Exactly. You know, I'd much rather get a chance to double my money and only have to beat one guy than have the possibility to win, you know, $20,000 but have to beat 10,000 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. One of the other things that I wanted to mention, and I think this kind of, you know, maybe hammer home the point a little bit in terms of just trying to get acclimated and find the system that's right for you. Because, you know, I think it's no stretch of the imagination to say that FanDuel and DraftKings are the top two in the industry. I think they're the top two names. I think they, you know, bring the most heat, have the best games in terms of format, in terms of layout and things like that. But they're so different in terms of roster construction and value and things like that. And I'm not going to talk about price. We can, you know, Mike, you and I can talk about the price value and things like that on a different show, maybe next week or something like that. But one thing I definitely wanted to talk about today was just simply the stat categories. I mean, so FanDuel, you get 4 points per win, and this is on the pitching side. You get 4 points per win. You get -1 for each earned run. You get 1 point for each strikeout and 1 point for each inning pitched. And that's it. Those are the only stat categories you get, period, just those four, okay? And DraftKings, you get the same amount for the win. You get 4 points. For earned run, you actually get penalized twice as much as FanDuel because each earned run is -2. Now, to put that in perspective, a 2 earned run performance, you know, forgetting everything else, 2 earned runs completely wipes out a win. They negate each other into zero. A strikeout, though, is twice as valuable because a strikeout under DraftKings is 2 points compared to the 1 point for FanDuel. And then also, DraftKings has 6 other categories that they have there. For innings pitched on DraftKings, you get 2.25 points just for pitching an inning. You get 2.25 points as opposed to the 1 for innings pitched because, and once again, innings pitched, or, you know, that's what, 2.25 times the value. And then, like I said, there are 6 other categories that FanDuel doesn't even touch, but you have to factor into DraftKings. You get -0.6 points for each of the following. You get -6 points for hits against, base on balls, and hit batter. So for every single hit, for every single walk, and for every single time you hit a batter, that's -0.6, which can add up very, very quickly. And then you get some bonus things. So for a complete game, 2.5 points. Complete game shutout is an additional 2.5 points. And then another no-hitter is an additional 5 points. And so, you know, a couple of those are, you know, they're going to happen so few and far between that it really won't matter. But if you think about it, so if your starter throws a 9-inning complete game shutout no-hitter, you just, without doing anything else, forgetting strikeouts, forgetting all the other things, you just got 46 points out of that start because you got the no-hitter, which is 5, The complete game shutout was 2.5, and the complete game was 2.5 plus the. I'm sorry, you know, it's more than that. I apologize. It's no, it's a little bit less. 38.25. Excuse me, 38.25. Because you get the 4 points for the win, and then you get nine innings of 2.25 points each for each inning pitched, and that's not including strikeouts or anything else. And obviously, in a no hitter, you're not giving up any hits or base on balls, and so you're not getting any of the negatives. And so, you know, that can be huge. Whereas on FanDuel, a 9-inning complete game shutout no hitter is, you know, just forgetting the other things like hits and strikeouts, it's only 13 points. And so from 13 to 38.5 or 38.25 or whatever I said, I mean that's a huge difference. And so that's just kind of one minute difference that I certainly think you should be taking into consideration. And then just real quick, running down the hitting, and we can talk about some of this. FanDuel, you get 1 point for a single, 2 points for a double, 3 points for a triple, 4 points for a home run. That's pretty simple. You get 1 point for each of an RBI, a run scored, and a base on balls, 2 points for a stolen base, 1 point for a hitting pitch, or a hit by pitch, excuse me, a hit by pitch, and you get negative 0.025 for every out. So you get penalized just for making an out. Now on DraftKings, the value for a triple is actually threefold. So you get 3 points per triple, or for single, excuse me, for single, you get 3 points per single. As a compared to 2 points on FanDuel for a double, DraftKings will give you 5 points. Triple, 3 points on FanDuel will give you 8 points on DraftKings. Home run, 4 points on FanDuel, 10 points on DraftKings. And then each of the RBI runs scored and walks that was 1 point on FanDuel, you get 2 points for on DraftKings. Stolen base, you get 2 points on FanDuel, you get 5 points on DraftKings. Hit by pitch, you don't get anything. If you get an out, you're not penalized on DraftKings. And then, but if you're caught stealing on DraftKings, you get negative 2 points. So, you know, if they have a stolen base and then a get caught stealing later, that's a net of only 3 points. Whereas on FanDuel, there's no penalty for a caught stealing. And so I know that was a little long-winded. I know I kind of hogged the airtime there, Mike, for a couple minutes. But, you know, I think it's important to note that these two systems are so vastly different that, you know, it does really matter which site you're playing on, depending on, you know, so in terms of, you know, how you're going to draft your pitchers, how you're going to put together your team. It really depends, you know, the strategy on or how to do that really does depend on which sites you're playing on.
Yeah, exactly. It just to show you a big difference, just in the home runs alone, you have 10 points for DraftKings and only 4 for FanDuel. So, you know, those are the things that need to, as you're looking at it, what do you, you know, you have to ask yourself, what do you excel at? Do you know, players that are going to be powerful and those kind of things, and you can focus in on home runs? Well, maybe DraftKings is better for you because you know players that are those kind of power hitters. If you're, you know, sort of not knowing and you're better at knowing exactly what, you know, someone who's more of a spray hitter, then maybe, you know, FanDuel is better for you. So it's knowing exactly what fits you the best and applying that to the rules and the points that each DF site gives you.
Would you agree with me that just based on, you know, these stat categories, and it just kind of – it seems like FanDuel is a little bit more streamlined and a little bit more simple. So would you agree with me that if you're brand new to DFS, it may be a good idea to start on FanDuel because you can kind of, you know, get a kind of a simple version, so to speak, of DFS before maybe jumping into a more complex format like DraftKings?
Yeah, especially with DraftKings because you have, say, three columns that are negative points. So right there you have to factor in those situations. With FanDuel, you have one in the hitting, which is an earned run. So, you know, if you know something about baseball, you can figure that out. And then you also have one in the out column, which, you know, is only 0.25%, so you can figure that out. But with DraftKings, you got three 0.60% and hit against, base on balls against, and hit batter. So you got to look at all three of those because that's over 1.5 points that could cost you. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a lot more streamlined. You're looking at smaller points, which is a lot easier to sort of deal with. That way you don't have to deal with the extra percentages and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. One of the things I want to, and this is just a cautionary tale, and this is actually, I'll go ahead and out myself. It's fine. I'm going to tell you this story because it happened to me, and so I want to make sure that other people, learn from my experience and learn from my mistakes. So I mentioned that last year was the first year that I really, got into DFS baseball and really, put together lineups multiple times a week. I mean, it certainly wasn't every day, but, multiple times a week I was throwing out a lineup. And when I first started, so I'm talking about like the first month or so, I was absolutely on fire. I mean, I was throwing lineups together and I was cashing left and right. I was making a lot more money than I had expected to make. It was doing really well, really well. Unfortunately, Mike, I will say that kind of got to my head a little bit, and I started to do a little bit less research and started to get a little bit complacent and started to kind of, I've got this. I know this stuff. And because that first month or so, I was doing, I'd say probably on average, I was probably doing an hour and a half to 2 hours of solid research, on any one day's slate of games before I made my lineup decisions. And, I'd scaled that back to, 15 or 20 minutes. And unfortunately, my results showed that lack of preparation because, I went from doing really, really well to, I had a lull in the middle of the season for about 6 weeks where I couldn't put together a cash, a lineup that was going to cash for any meaningful money to save my life. I mean, I was cashing, but I was kind of barely cashing, really wasn't making too much money. Luckily, within that downturn, I didn't lose a ton of money, but I certainly lost a little bit, lost some of the profit that I had made in that first month. And so what I want to make sure that you don't do is get complacent and get that mentality of, this is simple, I got this. Because you know what? Baseball is just so textured and so day-to-day and so, I think a lot of it depends on streaks and, is the hitter in the zone or is the pitcher in the zone? I mean, those kind of things, you can't look at it from a box score. You won't be able to get a pulse on from, every single team throughout the entire league at any one time. So, this is unavoidable. I mean, if you're going to get into DFS, and you want to make this a little bit more than a hobby. I mean, you want to make some money. I got to stress that you got to put the time in. You got to make sure that you're putting the time in because, if you put in an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours a day, that's gonna show itself in the results. And I can promise you that because there's enough tools out there and there's enough preparation and things like that and statistics to read and whatnot that you could read until you're blue in the face. I mean, you can read for days. And so, if it's out there, you want to read it. And I would suggest, kind of to that end, I would suggest talking to guys on Twitter. There's a ton of guys, you and I included, but there's a ton of guys on Twitter that are more than willing to talk about daily fantasy and give you, tips and tricks and whatnot or things to think about. But also, last year when I was in that funk and I hadn't really fully realized that the reason I was in that funk is because I wasn't doing the preparation. One of the things that I started to do was put together a lineup or a lineup that I was thinking about, and then I tweeted out to a couple of guys that I like on Twitter that I respect their opinion, and they give me some feedback on it, and then I go back to the drawing board depending on what they said and try to tinker with it. But the cautionary tale there, and the other reason I wanted to mention that is because, and it sounds bad, but it is what it is, because when somebody tweets something to me for fantasy football or fantasy baseball, I have no problem at any time giving my 100% honest opinion, whether that guy is in a league that I'm in or not. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Generally, they're not. Generally, they're not going to be in my same league. So my, me giving them my best doesn't really matter because, it doesn't affect me one way or the other. In DFS, it's different because, if I'm talking to a guy on Twitter today about the games tomorrow and I'm trying to put together a lineup, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. He may not give me his absolute, best sleeper or his gem of a starting pitcher pick because, that may take away from his bottom line. And so that's what I just wanted to mention it, that you want to make sure that while you're taking as much information in as you possibly can, make sure that at the end of the day you're making your own decision on your lineup because, you want to live and die by the sword, so to speak. I mean, if you put a lineup together and it finishes number one, I think, in a huge tournament or something like that, I think it might be a little bit of a hollow victory. At least for me, it certainly would be if, I had gotten most of that lineup or all of that lineup from some site or from somebody else. But at the same time, if I have a lineup that totally bombs and I got that lineup from somebody else, I don't have any ownership. So I'm just going to be like, oh, well, that guy sucked. But you know what? If I put together a lineup and I do it from top to bottom and then it just, it finishes last in the entire, the entire prize pool, then, that tells me that I need to work on it. And so that tells me that a better daily fantasy sports player. And so I just want, that's a, you know, just kind of a cautionary tale from experience that I think is important to throw out there.
Yeah, I think that it's very important to, and it's always good to sort of get second opinions on things. But just be careful with who you're talking to, because there's a lot of people out there that are going to give you advice and they have no idea what they're saying. So yeah, always take that. Always take advice with appreciation, but also with a grain of salt.
And with that, I will say, and this isn't a pet peeve of mine. So Mike, I apologize, or I shouldn't say I'm certainly not apologizing to you, but I'm just going to apologize to like the general public here. I'm going to go on like a 20-second rant. If you are following, or if one of these accounts are following you, the DFS accounts that are basically set up just to sell lineups that they're getting from other places on the internet, please block those people. Please don't pay them any money. I cannot believe that there are Twitter accounts and websites that all they do is form out lineups from other people and get so they'll get a lineup. For instance, you know, one of the guys that I love on Twitter is Jonathan Bales. I think it's Justin S. Bales on Twitter. I'm not looking at his Twitter account, so I'm not positive. But he's somebody that I really respect. And I've seen multiple times yesterday and today, these different accounts were showing lineups that I had gotten from Jonathan, because I actually get his daily email, his daily DFS email, and that exact information was popping up other places. And you know what? I sent Bales an email. I was like, dude, you know, I'm sure you know this. I'm sure you're aware. But you know, there's places across the internet that are literally taking your information, repackaging it as their own, and selling it to subscribers. And you know, he emailed me back 2 minutes later and was like, yeah, you know, I not only know that, but I'm in the process of trying to see what I can do about it. But just like I said, as a pet peeve, and just kind of a PSA, public service announcement, if you see those accounts, please block them. Don't pay them any attention, because number one, they don't know what they're talking about, because all they're doing is regurgitating information. But number two, I think it's really bad for the industry. That was all I had to say about that. Mike, you have a comment? Possibly may have lost Mike here. I'm not sure what's going on, so we're going to go ahead and keep going. I think it's important to within the DFS space as well. Just one more note. I think it's important to keep in mind what kind of golf game you're playing, because I think I mentioned this already. But 50s and 50s and head to heads are going to be your best bankroll builders. But also those lineups themselves have to, or I would suggest, be a little bit more on the safe side, rather than taking risks. Because, you know, if you're in a guaranteed prize pool tournament with 10,000 people, in order to make a meaningful cash, and what I mean by meaningful cash is, you know, money that's better than a minimum cash, and maybe even money that's, you know, actually going to help your bankroll, forgetting, you know, life-changing money if you finish up top. I mean, you know, some of these tournaments, you're going to be able to finish up top and cash for serious money. But I think it's important to keep in mind that in these 50-50s and head-to-head tournaments, you're only trying to beat one person. You only need to beat a few people. In some of the 50-50s, you only need to finish in the top half, which can be as many as 1,000 people, and can be as few as 3 or any number in between or what have you. But I think it's important to kind of err on the side of caution in those 50-50 and head-to-head lineups, and then you can afford to be a little bit more risky. Because, in those guaranteed prize pools, you're supposed to be chasing the top prize anyways, that top dollar. And so that's something that I would consider as well. Mike, you back with us?
Hello?
Mike, you there?
I'm here.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. No, I think my cable reset it. So my box decided that it was going to reset at the approximately the worst time ever. So I am
back.
Sounds
all right. did you hear what I was just saying about the kind of erring on the side of caution when you're looking at the head-to-heads and the 50-50s, as opposed to taking a little bit more of a risky approach in those guaranteed prize pools, just simply because, I mean, like I said, on the prize, the prize pools, or the guaranteed prize pools, you're chasing that top dollar, and so you can't really afford to be in the middle of the pack. You got to be at the top. Is that you're on board with
exactly.
That?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it only pays out, I think, to the top 10 or something, and by that time, it's not even, you're getting probably your money's back, so it's not even worth even that, because you're not even making any kind of return on your investment.
Right. And so to give you guys an idea, I'm going to pull up the details here. Okay, so in that lineup that I was talking about, the lineup that I did for today, the entry fee was only $3, so it's a very small entry fee, but it's a guaranteed $100,000 tournament, and the top prize is $10,000. So the top prize gets $10,000, and then going down then the top five, so the top prize is $10,000, second is $7,500, third is $5,000, fourth is $3,000, and fifth is $2,000. And this tournament right now has how many entries? Has 30,621 entries. And so in order to win $10,000, I got to beat the other 30,000-plus guys. But not only that, the fifth-place guy gets $8,000 less. There's only $2,000. And then if you keep going down, farther down, if you finish, for instance, 401st to 500th, you get $14. If you finish in the top 100, you're guaranteed $35. So if you finish in 100th place, you're going to get $35. Now, keep in mind, that's number 100 out of 30,000. And so that's still a great finish. But $35 is basically, that's not going to help you a ton. I mean, that's certainly a great cash for a $3 tournament, but it's not going to, change your bankroll. But $10,000, so only 34 places above that, I mean, $10,000, that's going to change your bankroll. That's a number right there. And, the reason I bring that up is because, in these guaranteed prize pools, $35 cash, like I said, doesn't really help you. And so I'm not looking to finish 500. I'm looking to make a lineup that may finish out of the cash altogether, but may win the whole damn thing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. And so, Mike, you and I actually, you had a great idea this past week, when we were talking about the what we wanted to do on the show. And so I wanted to wrap up the show here. We've got another 10, 15 minutes or so. Moving into what you coined this dynasty corner. I love the idea. I know that you and I are both huge dynasty guys. We're in baseball season now, so now we're done talking about projections. We're done talking about what we want to see or what we might see. I mean, now we get to talk about what we're seeing and take real takeaway from that and talk about some of the meaty stuff. Tell me one of the guys that you're looking to make an impact in 2015, but maybe not somebody that's up yet. Maybe somebody that we're going to be seeing kind of like mid-year. And I'm going to challenge you to stay away from the obvious names like Chris Bryant. So, we've already talked about Bryant. We've already talked about Rodon. We've already talked about a bunch of those guys. So talk to us about somebody else that maybe we haven't heard as much about.
One of the guys that I really like, and I think he's going to have an excellent chance to, sort of come up this year is, especially with the team, because the team is so young that they might be sort of, interjecting new players in to see how they work and so forth and so on, is Jose Peraza from Atlanta. He's a second baseman, and he's been racing through the minor leagues. He's just doing an awesome job. He has a quick, short swing and really very, very good, excellent hand-eye coordination, which you want in your hitters. Those are guys that are going to make contact with the ball on a routine basis just because they can see the pitch and use their eyes and their hands to make contact with that ball. Even though he does make a lot of contact with the ball, his power is sort of minimal. So he's your typical second baseman that's not going to deliver a lot of power, but is going to make some contact with it. So, he definitely can play either shortstop or second, so that's another thing that's valuable for any team. Anytime you can have a player that can move around the infield or play infield and outfield, you're increasing your chances of making the team. So, I have him as one of those interesting guys that could definitely be impactful for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, Peraza is definitely somebody that I'm looking forward to seeing come up. I mean, you know, he's only 20 years old, so this guy, may, you know, may get a taste of the majors this year, but I'm not really he's not somebody that I'm looking to make a huge impact on this year. I think actually, because, you know, of where the Braves are, I'm not sure that they're going to rush him along. I'm actually, it's interesting because I think I'm on the other side of, you make a great argument for your point of view. I think I just happen to be on the other side of it. I think that because they're, you know, they're not going to be playing for the playoffs this year, and because they're not going to be in contention, they may actually rather give him full time at bats in AAA or AA, so not to get him into, you know, a platoon role or something like that at the majors where he wouldn't be an everyday starter. They may want him to have a chance to start every single day. And you know, I'm not in love with Jace Peterson by any means at second base for the Braves, but I don't think he's. I mean, I don't think he's awful. I don't think he's a liability either in the field or at the plate. And so I think that Peraza, while he certainly profiles, I mean, in a dynasty league, Peraza is definitely somebody that I want to own, or if not own, I'm looking to get after him, because over the last month or so, there actually have been a couple articles and a couple things that I've come across that have been a little bit negative about him. So personally, I'd be looking to capitalize on that. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you. From a dynasty perspective, he's somebody that I'm definitely targeting in terms of wanting to own. But in terms of a 2015 impact, not entirely sure. It's such a crapshoot, for lack of a better word. I mean, you know, he could come up in May. I wouldn't be surprised, and he may be the starting second baseman for the Braves May through the end of the year, or they, like I said, they may keep him in the minors the entire season. Switching off that actually for a second, I noticed we didn't talk about one thing that I certainly wanted to mention. I think it's probably the biggest baseball news of the past week, outside of the fact that we just started the season, was the Craig Kimbrel trade to the Padres.
Oh yeah,
we hadn't talked about it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to back up for a second and go through that. So why don't you break that down for us? I know that Kimbrel is somebody that we've talked about before. In terms of the context of he may be a shutdown closer and maybe. One of the better closers, if not the best closer in the game. But, if he's playing on the Braves, he's not going to get many chances to save games. But you know what, Mike? After this one, he's now playing for the Padres, who, as we talked about, are going to be fielding a much better team. And so he's going to be in a position to save a ton of games now. And so value-wise, I think his value has taken a pretty sizable jump upward. But why don't you tell us about that deal and what you are now expecting from Kimbrel, given that news?
Yeah, so I totally changed the perspective. Unfortunately, I've pretty much done all my drafting before this trade occurred. So if you guys haven't and you guys still value Kimbrel, it's definitely a solid sign. He's going from a Braves team that probably wasn't going to win probably more than 70 games now to a Padres team that is definitely on paper right now going to, probably even win the division. So with that comes
Dodgers fans aren't going to want to hear that.
As long as the Dodgers don't win, I'm fine with it. You're definitely Kimbrel is one of the top closers in baseball. So when I was down on him, it wasn't so much because of the fact of his ability and his skill. It mostly had to do with the fact of his situations, and I didn't think he was going to get very many situations to close. So now he will. The one thing that's kind of interesting that I haven't really measured it out to a great sample size, but one of the things I've noticed, and maybe it could be a negative, is the fact when a team gets a closer or picks up a closer from another team, usually that closer kind of falls off the map a little bit. I've noticed that a lot, especially lately, where for instance, Heath Bell. I mean, he went and from the Padres was totally a dominant closer, and then left through free agency and was really never heard of again. Have you noticed that, or am I just probably just picking out one or two incidents that seem pretty stand out to me?
So two things. Number one, it's Heath Bell's fault because, good Lord, Mike, I mean, the guy decided to go to the Miami Marlins. I mean, what was he thinking?
Yeah, money.
But no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great point. I think there is certainly something to be said for that. But here's what I'll say. I think I don't necessarily think it's a change from one team to another. I think it's more due to the fact that I think Kimbrel is a perfect example. For me, Kimbrel is somebody that has been trending downwards year after year after year for the last couple of years. You know, it's been marginal, but he's certainly trending downwards. And, you know, I think that his fastball has gotten a couple of miles slower. At this point, you know, guys kind of, you know what he's about. So his pitches aren't as filthy as they are. It's not, you know, not as much of a surprise and things like that. I mean, the other name when you were talking about that, you know, and like I said, I totally agree with you. The other name that I thought about when you said that was Papelbon. You know, you saw Papelbon, who was liked out with the Red Sox, and then he went to the Phillies, and I think he had one pretty good year. But after that one year with the Phillies, he's kind of dropped off the face of the earth the last 2 years. And so I think there's definitely something to be said for that, but I'm not entirely sure it's due to, you know, the change of scenery rather than actually, you know, the other things kind of surrounding that that scenario. Going back to this deal specifically, you know, I think that this – you and I have talked about how the Padres have been making tons of moves, and the Padres have certainly gotten leaps and bounds better over last year. This is one of those moves that I'm actually not a fan of. I think the Padres lost out on this one pretty big. You know, they got Craig Kimbrel, which is fine, right? But they also acquired Melvin Upton Jr. in this deal. And as you and I both know, I mean, the guy is getting paid way too much money for literally no production, if not actually, you know, being a negative in the lineup because he can't seem to hit the ball for anything. You know, last year in 141 games, he batted .208 with 12 homers, 35 runs batted in, and 67 runs. I mean, that's an entire season. 140 games for somebody that supposedly, you know, he was a number one overall pick back in the day, right? And for somebody that's supposedly, you know, legitimate or whatever you want to call it, you know, 12 homers, 35 RBIs, and 141 games while batting .208. No, thank you. And so you've got that piece. And then the other side of it is what they gave up. I mean, so they got a legit closer, which is good. But you know, I'm not entirely sure that I was, you know, down on Benoit. I think Joaquin Benoit could have done a great job this year. So I'm not sure that Kimbrel was really a need per se. Not to mention that he's, you know, owed what, $24 million through the end of his contract. But the other piece of this that I think is just a mind-blowing, I don't even understand it, I think it's a huge win for the Braves, is they got top pitching prospect Matt Whistler, and they got the outfielders Carlos Quinton and Cameron Maybrin, both of who I think are actually upgrades over Upton. And then they also got the 31st pick overall in this year's upcoming draft, and then they also got a minor league outfielder. And so, I mean, that haul to me the Braves got is a landslide win victory. I mean, they should be doing, like, dances in the streets because I think they just fleeced these guys. And so I don't understand what the Padres were thinking. And the only thing I can think, and tell me if, you know, you see something else here, the only thing I can think of this deal is that the Padres feel like they weren't convinced that Benoit was the guy, and they thought that they were one piece away from a championship run, and that one piece was a shutdown closer.
That very well could be the situation.
I mean, this deal doesn't make sense to me in any other way. No, I was just saying, this deal doesn't make sense to me in any other way because if Kimbrel is not the final piece in the puzzle, you're paying him way too much money because, like I said, they're paying him $24 million through 2017. And so they're paying a closer a ton of money. And, you know, and obviously Melvin Upton Jr., as we've discussed already, is not going to be somebody that's going to move the needle, especially considering they already have kind of a glut of talent in the outfield to begin with. And so I'm missing it here. I don't understand this deal from the Padres' perspective at all.
Yeah, they gave up a lot of talent, especially a lot of future talent to get this. And I mean, I don't have any disagreement with you. That's for sure. That's what it looks like to me as well, where, we can get Craig Kimbrel. Okay, that's cool. Well, with the Braves, they're probably saying, okay, the only way you're going to get Kimbrel is if you take Melvin Upton with him. So they're like, well, sure. And, you know, so basically they gave up this kid, a lot of future talent for Craig Kimbrel. And, you know, with closers, who knows? They're such up and down that, I don't know if they just, after all these trades, they felt like, they needed to make another trade. Like, they were just itching for it and needed to cure that, you know, itch or what it was. But, yeah, I it doesn't really make much sense to me.
Two things, though, that I will mention. Actually, I guess it's only one thing in favor of Kimbrel. He's moving from Turner Field to Petco Park, and he's already somebody hasn't had an ERA over 2.1, and that was back in 2011. Hasn't had an ERA over 1.61 over the last 3 years, and so this, you know, this move certainly, you know, will probably bolster his staff in terms of, you know, lower ERA, lower WHIP, probably a higher K per nine. I would imagine. I think his saves are going to be mid 40s again. That all makes sense. And you know what, Mike, I was waiting to find the number before I actually said it because I knew it was an astronomical number, but I didn't want to overstate it. So they're paying. So the Padres are not on the hook to pay Kimbrel $24 million over the next three seasons. But you know what? Over the next three seasons, Mr. Melvin Upton Jr. is owed $43.35 million.
Jeez.
And so by doing this deal, the Braves wiped out a little bit over $80 million off their payroll combined for the next 3 years. And so, I mean, not to mention that they got some serious talent, actual talent as well. So, I mean, the Braves, like I said, I think
right.
The Braves got a huge win here. The Padres seem to be just – now they seem to be throwing money at, like, anyone and everyone because, I mean, at the beginning of the season – or the beginning of the offseason, I should say, you know, when they picked up James Shields and when they picked up, you know, some of the other pieces that they picked up in the trades and whatnot, you know, they were certainly going to be paying a lot more money out to these guys. But, you know, it looked like most of them, you know, most of it was smart money. You know, they're picking up a good portion of Matt Kemp's contract, but I'm a believer in Matt Kemp. They're picking up a good portion of Justin Upton's contract, but I'm certainly a much bigger believer in Justin Upton than I am in Melvin. They're paying Garrett Norris, Will Middlebrook, I mean, all of those guys. But, I don't know, man. This one bothers me. I mean, you know, I'm not a Braves fan. I'm not a Padres fan, so I don't really have any vested interest. But this one doesn't make any sense.
Well, the one thing that I think maybe the Braves or the Padres were sort of one, I think they of course like Craig Kimbrel, but Matt Wisler hasn't really done much for them. You know, he pitched great in Double-A, but when he moved up to Triple-A, he hadn't done much. So I think maybe one of the thoughts that they might have had is the fact that maybe he's just not good enough to be or make the professional ball league. So let's get rid of him because, you know, he's an attractive prospect and he's not really doing much for us. I mean, all that is speculation. His ERA it hadn't been great in AAA, 5.01. So he's definitely struggled in the AAA ball club. But, you know, I really can't make much sense out of why they would take on such a salary like Melvin Upton's, as you're mentioning, unless that was the only way they could get Kimbrel.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. I think, I mean, without knowing the inner workings of this deal, obviously, and I, unfortunately, I don't have any you know, inside sources that can verify this, but I would imagine, you know, that the Braves and the Padres were talking, and you know, when the Padres said, hey, you know, what's it going to take to get Kimbrel? The answer was, well, it's going to take this, but you know what, Mr. Melvin Upton Jr. is going with him. So I think you're probably right. We are running out of time here. I know we've got a couple more minutes, and so the last two pieces of news I wanted to mention before we get off air here. And wrap up the opening day podcast for the 2015 season are the Indians. You know, so the Indians made two pretty big moves this over the last couple of days to shore up their starting pitching rotation. They locked up Corey Kluber on a 5-year, $38.5 million deal, and then they also gave Carlos Carrasco a 4-year, $22 million extension. Both of these guys, I think, you know, slot pretty well into that 1-2, those 1-2 slots in the rotation. Big fan of both these guys, big fan of the signings. And I think, you know, in terms of the dollars spent, I think they're great values for the Indians as well.
Yeah, I think both are definitely solid deals. Yeah, exactly. I think they're both deserving and both right on the money there.
Yeah, you know, it's nice when, you know, when a team and a young player can get together and just, you know, get a deal together. You know, you don't have to mess with the free agency or the arbitration stuff or any of that stuff. You know, you just you sign the guy, you know, he gets enough money to make himself and his family and everybody else happy. The team gets, you know, gets to keep the guy for a couple of years. You know, I'm just a huge fan of deals like this. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and then on the other side, we're going to wrap up with a couple of news and notes and then sign off for the day, all right?
Sounds good.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com as your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
All right. You know, as I said at the top of this show, I'm just absolutely I can't express really how excited I am that baseball has actually started. We're no longer talking about projections or kind of, you know, what we want to happen, but this is real. This is happening. We're in it for the long haul until October. And I think actually, you know what, Mike, I didn't even look, but I think the World Series this year may be the first week of November. I'm kind of liking this November baseball thing. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I just wish they would extend the wild card game. That irritates me just because it's such a slap in the face against the tradition of baseball. If you can have a three-game series against a team, then why are you only having a one-game playoff? It makes no sense to me. But, I'm hopefully that's going to tail in that direction upcoming soon.
So we talked about that a few podcasts back, and that's, you know, that's an issue that, you know, we may need to talk about again. We may need to revisit that one. But, yeah, that's something that I think baseball may need to look at. You know, and obviously, since baseball is always looking to increase revenue, I don't think they necessarily object to having two more games of revenue, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
And all right. And so just before we sign off, I just wanted to once again mention how excited I am, not only for the baseball season, but also for this partnership with the Asylum Sports Network. I think it's going to be great for both sides. I'm really looking forward to listening to the other podcasts that are on the network and, you know, getting to know some of the guys, you know, a little bit better as well. But I'm just really grateful for the opportunity to be a part of it. And, Mike, you know, I'm looking forward to taking this journey with you, and hopefully this is you know, the first stop or the first milestone of many on the Pine Tar podcast.
Absolutely, right there with you. Looking forward to all the great journey and the bumps in the road and everything else that comes with it. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to experience it all.
Yeah, you know, it's gonna be, hey, we're gonna have some good, we're gonna have some bad, we're gonna have some ugly, but you know what? It's all a part of the ride. It's all a part of the journey. And I'm just excited to, I mean, I think I've said this a couple times on the air, and Mike, I know you're right there with me, but, you know, to have the opportunity to not only have a passion for baseball and you know, dig into some of the stats and whatnot, but also have an outlet to talk baseball with somebody else that loves it as much as I do. And just, you know, go after it for 90 minutes a week after, you know, on this podcast has been something that I just have had so much fun with over the last couple of months. And I'm just looking forward to continuing this and seeing what it brings.
Absolutely. Yep. I'm right there with you.
All right, Mike. All right, man. Well, hey, like I said at the top of the show, I'm going to go ahead and jump off the air here. I've got a baseball game to go to. I know there's a 6:10 kickoff. I keep saying kickoff. There's a 6:10 first pitch for the Astros game here tonight in Houston. So I'm going to go ahead and jump over there, see if Mr. Corey Kluber can get knocked around a little bit by my hometown Astros. But I do see now that the Red Sox are up 4-0 in the sixth. So I'm already happy. Today's already a win if they go ahead and lock up that W. Hey, actually, there's 4-0. Hey, the Red Sox are leading 4-0 in the six after six with four solo home runs. That's going to be good. I like that.
Oh, that's interesting.
All right, man. Well, hey, great show this week, and I will catch you next week, all right, man?
All right, Ben. Have a great time at the game tonight.
Thanks. Have a good one.
All right, bye.